This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Now, the opening drive.
Seahawks were like Rocky. That's how they started out this free agency period. They're just sitting there eating punches, eating leather. Body blow. We're going to lose Justin Coleman. Headshot. Earl Thomas is going to Baltimore. Another body blow. J.R. Sweezy going to Arizona.
Gut shot.
And just like Rocky, the Seahawks have come off the ropes, and in the later rounds, they're fighting back. The Big Russian's bleeding. We've got Mike Iupati, and as well as DJ Fluker. Iupati, who is a longtime nemesis of the Seahawks, someone they're intimately familiar with, and will now be playing for his third of the four NFC West teams. A guard from University of Idaho, who is one of the league's better guards for his first few years and has been injury-prone these past few. And then DJ Fluker, who was, I don't want to say spirit animal of the offensive line, but a guy who brought some of the toughness and swagger back to this group. Not just the way he talked, but the way a truly inspiring character. And he's going to be re-signed to the Seahawks. They also formally signed Jason Myers, the kicker, and we're hoping to talk to him today. But the Seahawks in free agency showing a little bit of a late surge here.
Yeah, and then KJ Wright, too. So, you know, Bobby won't be so lonely on that defense because that's with Earl gone, that's kind of the last of it.
Which of these are the most important in your mind? The three new ones that have happened since the end of yesterday's show. KJ Wright, DJ Fluker, and Mike Iupati. Because I think it's KJ. And I didn't know what to think. I didn't know what to expect. I did not believe that the addition of Michael Kendricks was going to rule him out. I knew that there was room still for KJ. My question was there going to be another team that was going to pay him more than the Seahawks, given KJ's age and the health of his knee? And I do think that there is a question about how healthy he can be. I'm pumped that he's back, and I think that they found a middle ground in some ways that helps both sides, that if KJ is able to play, he's going to be in position to make a top-shelf salary for a linebacker. $7.5 million, it's a two-year, $15 million contract, and that's great. I would also say that a two-year contract, and we haven't seen how it's structured yet, but that I would bet that there are some provisions there to make sure that he's able to play, because if he's able to play and on the field, he's absolutely worth every penny of a $7.5 million annual contract.
Well, and we especially saw that in that last game against Dallas, man. It was amazing. He had one missed tackle, but other than that, he played as good of a game as you can play. And that's even with the pass interference penalty, which I thought was kind of bogus. I thought the legs got tied up. But, yeah, I think the signing of those two linebackers, both Kendricks and KJ Wright, indicates that they know what the deal is. You know, they wouldn't do that with, and I don't know for sure on this, of course, but Michael Kendricks obviously is going to be available. And then, you know, they think that whatever's going on with KJ Wright's knee, they can manage it. Whereas another team's probably not likely to take that, you know, that chance. And when it comes to medical, you know, everybody has their own opinion. There's not some collective idea around the NFL. There were teams when I came into the league, after having seen my injury and everything, that were not going to draft me, no matter what, because even if it was in, you know, the 12th round.
They were discriminating against you?
Yes, and rightfully so. If they saw the video of my knee getting blown out, yeah, it was ugly. So, yeah, there were teams that weren't going to do that. It's still that way. And right now, I think the Seahawks they know what the knee is and what's going on with it, and they can handle it. Same thing with Kendricks. They must have some idea. I'm just guessing that, you know, they have an idea that he's going to be available.
Well, they've been listening to me. And I've been pretty adamant.
Because of your bet with Jim Moore.
Well, not even just my bet. Like, I'm fairly confident that he's not going to have time incarcerated after the sentencing hearing.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think, you know, at the very least, he's going to, you know, or the very most, I should say, he'll probably do some kind of an awareness thing or something. You can probably get more out of that than just throwing him in jail.
Or he's also, by the time he gets to that sentencing hearing, he will have already complied with the terms of any sort of home detention or incarceration that was there. That's also possible, and then we'll be on probation after that.
Yeah. Well, to answer your question, it's DJ Fluker to me, just because, you know, I thought that he was really, you used the word inspire. That's what I thought he brought to that offensive line. He inspired the players around him. I think he inspired the mentality of that running game. And it's always been with Pete Carroll, we want a punishing running game. And a guy like DJ Fluker, he is in it for all of it. You know, he's a brawler. He's the guy that's going to take Ndamukong Suh to the water.
Take him to the water.
And, you know, whatever, he mentioned something about a bear fight. And then he said another time he talked about fearing no man. And, you know, that's his mentality. So I guess from that standpoint, I thought he was maybe more important than, you know, any of the other. The kicker, I think, honestly, but we have no idea what we're going to get out of that guy. He gets cut in Jacksonville. They sign him, and then he doesn't win the job here. And then he goes to New York, and he's a Pro Bowler. So you have no idea what you're going to get here with him. But, you know, I would say that, like, a reliable kicker is – that's pretty high on the list as well.
I would agree.
Most NFL games come down to 3 points.
Yes. And the question isn't the importance of the kicker. The question is, how much does a previous track record play a role, and how do you find yourself a good kicker? Because there's also sorts of different ways to do it. And, well, Stephen Hauschka was a great kicker for this franchise for a number of years, and he was a guy that was picked up a week before the regular season started in 2011. So all of these different things. But DJ Fluker, I found this really interesting. Mike Solari, who, this is his second stint with the Seahawks, but came back as the offensive line coach. And this is from back in June, so almost a full year ago, when he was asked about what DJ Fluker, what he's like as a player.
Physical, tough physical football player. DJ is a very good football player. Again, when I say a good football player, what he brings off the field, his leadership qualities, how he goes about his business. I don't know if you had a chance to talk to him. He has unbelievable passion for the game. He loves the game. And it's great for young guys to see it. That guy's been in the league, how much he loves the game.
There's another word, passion, to go along with your inspire.
Yeah, and I would say this, that I love it when teams sign guys they know. When you decide to bring back a guy that's been on your team, you know more about him than you do about anybody else. When you acquire a player from another team, look at Percy Harvin. Like, that was, you knew kind of, but you're also projecting, how's he going to exist in this environment? Maybe our coach can bring something out of him that previous coaches couldn't. All of those different projections that you're making, when you're re-signing DJ Fluker and you're re-signing KJ Wright, you know what those guys bring. And not only that, but you have a better understanding of any physical ailments they have than anybody else will. Right. And so that's why I was really encouraged. And I didn't know what to expect from KJ Wright. I really didn't know. I didn't know how other teams in the league were going to view him. And my fear was, is that other teams were going to maybe be more likely to throw longer-term contracts at him than the Seahawks were, having the Seahawks have watched over these past 2 years, as he's obviously had a knee that's troubled him. 2 years ago, undergoing the Regenikine treatment, then last year being really limited and undergoing a couple of different procedures. One was an arthroscopic surgery in training camp, and then another one later. You mentioned, Dave, he played great in that playoff game, which I think gave you an opportunity to see, man, if this guy gets on the field, he's still a player.
Yeah, well, and the other thing, too, is you know, he's been fairly healthy up until last year. I know that was really disappointing for him to have to go through that, but what a great ending for him. So, and then, you know, the other thing I'd say, and I was kind of bummed about Sweezy, but I think they feel like they got a bigger, more physical player, actually, than Sweezy in Mike Iupati. And the other thing is, it doesn't cost you anything. So he was released, so when they sign him, they don't have to, it's not a compensatory pick.
Correct.
Type of deal. And it was with Sweezy, they got something back. And, you know, if they'd assigned somebody that was a restricted free agent, it would have, you know, made that basically a moot point. And I think we're going to end up finding out that they're going to get him for a couple million dollars less than J.R. Sweezy in the end.
And we'll see if he's able to play as well. Iupati's undoubtedly a very physical player. He's also a bigger dude that has finished each of the past two seasons on injured reserve, yeah. So we'll have to see how he holds up. The big news that happened this afternoon, and, well, Washington playing USC in their first game, the quarterfinals of the Pac-12 tournament. It's USC's second game, but Washington's first game. They win 78-75. It was a very, very close game down the stretch. And Washington, they got the benefit of an extremely knuckleheaded play by USC's big man, who threw the ball away. With that, USC had the ball down three and a chance to tie after Jalen Noel made one of two free throws, and their big guy got caught where he jumped in the air with the ball and had to throw it and whipped a pass out of bounds, which was awesome and I thought emblematic of USC, which is this incredibly talented team that has terrible fundamentals when it comes to basketball. They're an unstructured chucking offense. They made a couple huge three-pointers late off of that style and then ultimately had them. The play of the game, though, was Dominic Green making a three-pointer that I was screaming at him not to take. Because
everybody was.
He dribbled and pulled up, and he's a set shooter, and he made it. And then Matisse Thybulle on the ensuing possession anticipated a pass, and it was like a cornerback jump and a route because he was free for a breakaway and then threw down a windmill slam, and that put the Huskies up by six.
That's funny that on the broadcast they were comparing him to Ed Reed. A safety, you know, and then with the other guy, I think it was Roxy Bernstein, said something about, well, he's more like Richard Sherman to me. So they're comparing him to, you know, this thievery that you know, picking the ball off. And that was just such a great way to end that game. I thought also, Thybulle, here's something about, he's such a nice kid and everybody talks about him, but he's got a little bit of, I'll just call him a brat. How about that? That's a nice way of saying it, and it's the most complimentary, you know, term that I can think of, is that he's annoying to opponents. And
you're saying that's what he did to Thornton?
Thornton, in the very beginning when Thornton got that which ended up being two free throws, and they got the ball, and what it was that Thybulle went out there and to guard him and then kind of gave him a little shove at the end. And so then when Thornton, somebody made a shot, he went and screamed at Thybulle and forced a technical foul. So you just see how he would be really annoying to play against. He's everywhere. He's got those long arms. And then how about him finishing with the big windmill dunk?
That was an awesome dunk.
What a great way to end that game.
Somebody asked, and I think Mike Sulk was like, should he have pulled back? Because they had the ball and they're up four, and maybe time score situation, you're better. No, when you've got a chance to windmill dunk like that, you windmill dunk like that. It was awesome.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah.
It was fantastic. Why are they playing at noon?
I don't know.
Washington is the number one seed. They should be in your featured part of the lineup, right?
Yeah.
And they're playing the first game. The first of the four Pac-12 quarterfinals. What kind of sense does that make? And that's not a, hey, we saw the arrangement of teams and we think Washington and USC is the least compelling matchup, so we're going to put them first. This is how Larry Scott and his brain trust structured the tournament field. So that at 6 o'clock, what is it, on ESPN, when you've got an actual television, like a widely distributed television network, you're going to get, oh, I'm sorry, it's Oregon, Utah that's on ESPN.
Not till 8:30 at night tonight.
When you're going to get the ESPN. Wouldn't you want your best team on ESPN?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you want your best team? And instead, in the first game at noon.
Or at least how about play it at prime time?
Yeah.
On the Pac-12 network.
Put it featured. Hey, you're first, so that means you're first. Like, is it that literal? Jim Moore did have, who is ill still today. We're wishing and hoping him the best and getting better. But he tweeted out last night that the only way Ernie Kent saves his job is if Pat Chun, Washington State's athletic director, has DirecTV instead of Comcast. Because if he has DirecTV, he would be unable to see the Pac-12 network and watch what happened to the Cougs last night as they got dropkicked.
Yeah, very well done by him. And I was complaining earlier, Stanford gets blown out by UCLA, Wazoo also by Oregon, so not much fun. And then, you know, it looked like USC kept hanging around. You said this, Danny, that's the kind of team that beats the Huskies. They have a bunch of talent, and you mentioned Rakosevich. They didn't have any kind of an answer for him early on. He was getting inside, but Noah Dickerson is so tough, man. He made some great plays, out rebounded him a couple of times, and then you got the good David Crisp today. So
I did get the good David Crisp. Yeah. I was fearing he was going to hoist up that three pointer that ended up passing it to Dominic Green, who then did hoist up the three pointer, but he made it. A big win for the Dogs. They're going to advance. They'll play the winner of Colorado Oregon State, which looks like it's going to be Colorado. Colorado's up 33-12 right now. 33-12 in that game. But free agency, the first wave, and we'll talk to the professor, John Clayton, at 4 o'clock. The first wave has crested. This is the first wave of free agency is done. And the most recent big deal was Golden Tate, who is inexplicably going to the New York Giants. If anybody has a clue what the Giants are doing, please let me know. I assumed they were hitting the Control-Alt-Delete and we're going to restart everything. I assumed when they traded Odell Beckham Jr., despite having just signed him for two draft picks and Jabril Peppers, that they were essentially going, okay, we're going to start this thing over. We're going to accumulate some draft picks, and we're going to stink this year, and we're not going to do anything. And now they go out and spend. It's a healthy contract for Golden Tate. It's like a 4-year, $36 million deal. What in the world are they doing?
I don't know. Dave Gettleman, the GM there, says that he has a plan. I'm not sure what that is, but yeah, Golden Tate, and a lot of people thought maybe he might be a guy that would sign back here, and he's one of the few free agents that have gone there, you know, somewhere else, and actually it's worked out, and you kind of, you know, wish that you had Golden Tate back, because other than that, the guys they haven't signed haven't really gone on to be that good, right? I mean, I'm trying to think of who. You know, Byron Maxwell didn't work out for him, didn't work out for Walter Thurman, who I think signed in with the Giants, right?
First deal was with the Giants, then went to the Eagles.
So, you know, they're just staying out of that first wave. But, yeah, I'm not sure what's going on with the Giants. And if you're Eli Manning, you know, what are they going to do there with him at quarterback? So, yeah, it's kind of interesting to see and think, you know, can these people be that stupid? You know, like the Raiders signing LaMarcus Joyner. The guy is 5'8". He got a deal that's just south of $11 million.
Yep.
And you know, not only is he 5'8", but he doesn't high point the ball. And one of the great examples was, and I was looking on the Raider website, and they're like, well, you know, you can see some bad plays if you watch enough film. And I'm like, just watch any game that he plays in, and you're gonna see some bad plays. But yeah,
so he's 5'8", but plays smaller than that.
Yeah, and like the interception, that whole thing with the penalty with New Orleans and the Rams in the NFC Championship game where Nickel Roby, whatever his name was, you know, ends up hitting the running back. That wouldn't have happened if LaMarcus Joyner had, and it was a duck that Drew Brees threw up, and he's playing safety, and he goes up and he tries to catch it like a punt. Instead of going up and high pointing the ball, and so it ends up not being an interception, but that whole thing would have been erased if he was a better safety. So, you know, my point is you look around the league and think, man, can these NFL teams be, like to your point with the signing Golden Tate, can they be that dumb? And the answer is yes. And so I'm just glad for the Seahawks that they are sitting back letting everybody else make a fool out of themselves and making some good moves. And Will Blackman told us this the other day when we interviewed him, used to be a defensive back with the Seahawks, that the Seahawks are really good at developing the bottom end of their depth chart. And not that, you know, these are cases of that, because Yupati's going to be a starter. You know, I'm sure you're going to have a good choice to make whether to put Kendricks or KJ Wright on the field. So, you know, but they do a good job of not going fishing for these big free agents and spending a ridiculous amount of money. I just can't believe that guy is going to get $11 million. So, you know, and that they're making some good moves. And I think it'll be hard for people to see until they put it on the field that Mike Yupati is a better move than J.R. Sweezy. Because number one, you don't give up the compensatory because of, you know, signing Yupati. He's bigger, he's more physical, and you're going to get him. It's probably going to end up being $2 or $3 million less per year.
I'll be interested to see how it goes. I'm still skeptical. I would list of the 6 free agents the Seahawks have lost. Sweezy's the one I'm most concerned with, just because we've seen them for years have trouble finding adequate, affordable replacements for free agent offensive linemen they lose, or guys that they trade. Max Unger, Breno Giacomini, Sweezy the first time. And it's not that Seattle should have kept any of those guys. It's that we watched that offensive line get too young and struggle for an extended period of time. The guy that I'm most excited about them getting, I'm excited about Kendricks and Wright still being there, because I think that gives this team a good group of linebackers. But I'm glad that they went out and signed Jason Myers. I'm really glad that they took a different approach to kicker. And they looked at it and said, this is something our approach the past 2 years has not worked. We're going to try something different. We're going to put some money into the position. And that's the best guy that we can afford, that is available for us to sign. And they went and did it. We'll have lots more on free agency. And I'll always keep an ear out to what's going on. But right now here on Danny, Dave, and More, it's time for us to take two.
Take two.
Well, as we know, some of us know, UW won their first game because the game was at noon. They beat USC, and by all indications, it looks like they'll be facing off against Colorado tomorrow, who's got a healthy lead nearing the end of the first half against Oregon State right now, which sets them up to play on the Pac-12 Network all over again tomorrow.
People texting in that it's so Washington can get more rest. And that's a valid explanation for why Washington will play at noon. Doesn't Larry Scott say the Pac-12 is a media company, though?
Yeah, that's not his concern.
If it's a media company, aren't you trying to put your best properties under the brightest lights? I still and the other thing is, how often do basketball players play in the offseason? How many games a day do they play? The idea that getting 3 extra hours, we're going to play at noon today so we can play at 4 p.m. tomorrow and get more rest.
Well, and there are no brighter lights in Vegas this week than Larry Scott's hotel suite.
That makes me so mad.
Larry
Scott is staying in a suite. It's on the Strip.
It's at the Aria Hotel,
which is a smoke-free casino.
Why is that important?
It's $7,500 a night.
It feels Vegas. It's got its own butler. It has access to its own private pool.
Oh my goodness.
I believe it has its own separate elevator, even.
And how do we know this? I mean, you'd think he would do everything to try to keep that from getting out.
There are some people in the conference who don't like him, presumably, and are giving the same information to John Canzano of the Oregonian, who has set himself up as the documenter of all of Larry Scott's different shortcomings and flaws, and he's doing great work with it. And people have pointed out, oh, the room is comped. I think that that's a too liberal use of the word comped. It's not like it's free. It's part of the accommodations that the Pac-12 has purchased. And he does have to entertain, but the idiot should know that how it looks. If you need something like that to entertain people, rent it as an entertaining space. Don't make it where you're staying. You know where the WCC commissioner is staying? $100 a night room in the Orleans Hotel, which is where the WCC tournament is played. But that doesn't look like $7,500 a night suite with its own butler. You shouldn't be staying there if you're the commissioner who's already being called Limo Larry.
Best Western is probably the low end, most solid. When I used to book trips for my wife's company.
Pretty consistent.
Best Western, that's where he should be. He should just be in a single Best Western hotel if he had any sense at all. Even if they did comp it. Gene Upshaw did the same thing. Whenever they would go out and they would have all their big union meetings in Hawaii for some reason. And why not just go to Indianapolis or, you know, whatever the center of the contiguous United States are, you know, go to a place like that. Why go? And then he had like the big, at the time it was like a $3,000 a night suite. And I'm just, that is such a bad look. How can you be that unaware if you own a media company?
Mariners third baseman Kyle Seager had successful surgery, but his return time has been pushed back from around 6 weeks to 8 to 10. So he's out till June.
It's a bummer. It doesn't handicap their season like it would have a year ago. This happens a year ago, and if you began this season hoping that the Mariners make the playoffs, this would be devastating. In a year where it's not that it doesn't matter, but that you're not starting what you want for this season is to see growth among your young players. I look forward to seeing what Kyle's going to play like when he gets back and seeing if his sleeker, more lean build helps him perform better, but it's not going to derail their season.
You're right. I feel bad for him personally. You know, having gone through that, there was an off season when I turned 30, I panicked and I was like, I was having a kid, I got married, and I'm like, I'm an older player, I got to work really hard, and I worked really hard, and got my body fat down into single digits. I was running every day, and all that prep just went down the tubes when I got hurt in preseason, and it was like 2 days before the opener and blew my knee out in practice. And the disappointment there is that you put all that hard work in. Now he's going to be back, but still, and just like I, you know, it was a couple months that I had to, you know, have the surgery and heal up and everything, but it just kind of derails you for a while. So personally for Kyle Seager, I feel bad for him. I'm sure there's a tremendous amount of disappointment.
Danny David Moore. Jim Moore out sick today. We've got a lot coming up for you later this hour before we get to the professor at 4 o'clock. The good, the bad, and the really, really ugly of free agency next.
This is Danny Dave and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Best and worst pieces of news so far in free agency. You can text it in 710-710. What's the thing that concerns you the most? What's the thing that you're happiest about? I'm happiest about the addition of Jason Myers. I think that Seattle is taking a step to address what has been a significantly unstable position over the past 3 years. I don't know if it'll work, but it's a different approach, and they're doing the best they can. And really, that's all it is. I felt like the last 2 years, they thought, and I agreed with the approach. I agreed with the approach of taking a kicker on the rebound and saying, we're not going to give Hauschka a raise. He struggled last year. If we're going to sign a kicker that's coming off of a tough year, we're going to do it for the minimum. We're going to do it for less. And they went with Blair Walsh, which I thought, he's got a strong leg. It didn't work. And it definitely, I don't think it worked with Sebastian Janikowski. And at least they're going to try. If this doesn't work, at least it will not be working for a different reason.
Do you think also that with Walsh, there is a little bit of, okay, he won't do that again, right? He's not going to miss a chip shot like that. And then you end up missing kicks in three games that they could have won. They could have tied Atlanta. They could have beat Arizona. And then what was – oh, the Redskins.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where he missed three in that one?
Correct.
So, yeah, that was
it three
rough,
kicks
man.
In a game they lost by 3 points?
Yeah, and so that was right after the season ended. You know, they brought in Myers, and, you know, and I would say I would agree with you, except that you just don't know what you're going to get out of kickers. It's just weird that, Cody, I can only think of Doink Doink because that's what
Parkey.
The professor
Cody
says
Parkey.
Every time. But, yeah, I mean, he was considered one of the upper-end kickers in the league last year.
Got a ton of money.
Yeah, so, you know, I would say that, but, you know, I'm gonna go with KJ. You know, even though I think DJ Fluker is a guy, and those guys are probably 1 and 1A, I think most importantly, you get a guy like KJ right back. And, you get him re-signed because he's one of the good ones, right? Like, he's one who, you know, him and Bobby, have they ever done anything that made you kind of go, what are they doing? You know, chasing a coach into the locker room to ask to come get me, complaining about play calling, throwing a fit on the sidelines. No, never any of that. And as a matter of fact, you get quite the opposite with both KJ and Bobby because those guys are great leaders. And so I'm really happy to see KJ right back here just because of the tenure of, how long he's been here. I think he brings the same kind of spirit on defense that DJ Fluker brings on offense. And it's kind of weird to say that about DJ Fluker comparing the two because he's only been here a year. But, you know, that's what football's all about. The way he plays, the way he is even after the game, the way he talks, everything, you know, that's a football player. You need to be excited about it. You need to be passionate about it. You need to inspire your teammates around you. And he's been all of that. So you're not just getting the physical body of DJ Fluker, you're getting, and I know it sounds kind of hokey, but you're getting the spirit of what he's about, and that's really important now because you have guys, and not everybody is affected negatively by money, but there is some things there that are, you know, understandable that there are temptations and there are, you know, times where you think, oh man, this is going to change that guy, and it doesn't do that to everybody, but more than ever, with the amount of money that's flying around, you've got to have guys that are all in and just love football, and that's what DJ Fluker's all about.
The one question that I have coming out of this is about Frank Clark, and we haven't heard much from him on Twitter recently. He's got the franchise tag. The deal for D Ford, San Francisco signing D Ford to a 5-year contract for a little over $87 million, and San Francisco trading a second-round pick from 2020, which is the equivalent of a third-round pick in this year's draft, to get him, should set up all the parameters for a deal. And just because something hasn't happened yet doesn't mean it won't, but everything should be in place for if Seattle wants him, the price is pretty well outlined. If Seattle doesn't want him, well, then it's a matter of another team being willing to offer the kind of money that San Francisco gave to D Ford, and you can see what Seattle will get back. What it answered for me pretty clearly is that you want to re-sign Frank Clark because getting what amounts to a third-round pick this year is not even nearly enough to think of not having your best pass rusher.
Yeah, I think I would like it if Frank would stay off Twitter. You know, have we seen heard anything from him?
I'll see his last one.
But
he was the one that made me vow that I just wasn't trying to parse athletes' Twitter anymore.
That's right.
I saw the flame picture of a Brinks truck that was on fire, and I was
sure
like,
"What that means?
What does it mean? Does it mean that that teams are setting money alight in their pursuit and contracts they're giving to lesser players?
The Raiders are,
or it could be that he's watching his prime earning opportunity go up in smoke because he's sitting here with stupid franchise tag, or maybe he just likes the movie Dead Presidents, which is a pretty good movie by the Hughes brothers.
I saw that. I don't remember a Brinks truck catching on
yeah,
fire.
Yeah, I think that's where the picture was from. Okay. I might not be totally right, but I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I'm like 70% certain of that.
It was a long time ago, and I was painting our bedroom when it was on TV, and I was listening to it. There's an interesting little factoid for you. But I think that they are resolved to – they know they're going to pay him $18 to $20 million. They want Frank here. Pass rushers are highly coveted in the NFL, and he's a top 10 player, to say the least.
And that should set everything out there. The last tweet we saw from Frank was 3 hours ago. I wouldn't describe it as concerning, but this was 3 hours ago, so that's somewhere around noon Pacific time. It says, "I woke up to the best news in the history of great people news. I thought it was fake." Somebody will have to parse the emojis for me because I don't know how.
What are they? Can you describe them?
It looks, it's a face with a sniffle. Like, it looks like there's a tear coming off of it. Like, sentimentally sad. Not wailing or sorrowful, but like, oh, that brought a tear to my eye.
That was good parsing, Danny.
Woohoo! It's the announcement of Seattle re-signing KJ Wright.
Oh, okay.
So I said it brought a tear to his eye. The other reason that I was excited about KJ Wright, not only is he a great dude and all that, and he's played the last 8 years here and just dominant, awesome linebacker. It was a good opportunity for puns. All is right with the world.
Oh, yeah.
Blessed are the righteous, for they shall decimate opposing running backs. This one was for the right-leaning members of the crowd.
Wyman goes full Tom Sula when you get punny.
I don't know.
What move do you like best that they made, that the Seahawks have made in free agency?
No, I think KJ Wright. That's the one I like the most. I'm, like I said, Fluker is, you know, somewhere around there. But, yeah, KJ, just because of what he's meant to this team. And then, you know, here's the other thing. And same thing with Frank Clark. I like that those guys all support Russell. You know, you support your teammates. So, and there was a picture today of what, he was in a velvet jacket or something like that?
Looked to be brown velvet, which I thought might be his alter ego. Like, it might be his secret agent code name, brown velvet.
But, you know, like, he's just, he's not doing anything. He's fine, okay?
He's a little weird.
I don't care. He's a great quarterback, and he's a good man, and he's got a family.
Sierra was wearing, like, leopard print dress and matching jacket.
That's fine. That doesn't affect anybody. That's all right. He's still going to go out and ball out.
His jacket was made of brown velvet.
What about some of the stuff you wear, Danny? What's with those sky blue pants you have on? Does that even match that purple tie? No, I mean, look, that's the thing. KJ, Bobby, and Frank Clark. Remember Frank tweeting out, you know, "I can't tell you how much I appreciate you, Russell." And so, yeah, that's what you want. I'm no more of this other stuff with, you know, dogging Russell and telling him he sucks and all that stuff. I mean, all that stuff is gone away. And that makes a difference on a team. It really does. So I'm loving that part of it.
710 ESPN Seattle. Really excited. We're partnering with Coaching Boys Into Men, and it's a program that here locally has been involved with 16 different high schools. I believe there's about 2,000 different high school athletes and students that have been touched by this program, that have been assisted by it, and it's devoted to empowering coaches to teach the value of respect, integrity, and leadership to bring an end to violence against women. For more information and get involved, you can text COACH, COACH, to 710-710. As we kick off this partnership, we're going to talk to one of the people involved in bringing the program to the students, James Beck, who is part of the football staff at O'Day High School, also a counselor there. We're going to talk to him next about the impact that this program has made.
You're listening to Danny Dave and Moore,
live from the Alaska Airlines Studios,
streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It's Danny Dave and Moore. We're joined now on the Venue Kings hotline by James Beck, who is a counselor at O'Day High School, also an alum of O'Day, and someone who is involved in a program that we're getting involved with here at 710 ESPN Seattle, and that's Coaching Boys Into Men. And it's a program that's aimed at preventing dating violence And James, let's start out by just how would you describe the program to someone who's hearing about it for the first time?
Well, I just want to say I'm also a football coach on the football team. And the program we have is delivered primarily to the football players. The program teaches students, our student athletes, essentially two sort of different kind of ways in terms of preventing gender violence. First way, we really, you know, we talk to them a lot about it's okay to intervene, and this is sort of in-your-face prevention. And then the second way, which is most important, we feel like, is to really change the culture and the norms around how men view women in society, in our society. And we do that by engaging in talks with our football players on Thursdays before our games. We have our large team meetings.
James, that's got to be pretty rewarding work for you. What kind of results have you seen?
So the results that we've seen, I mean, the biggest results that I've seen have been sort of anecdotally things that, you know, and I'll tell you, I'm one of the biggest skeptics about this program. I was like, you know, are these little conversations actually going to work? Are they going to listen? You know, it's Thursday right before a game. They really tuned into that. But then, you know, you have these moments every now and again that kind of remind you of the importance and that it is actually sticking in a lot of these guys' heads. Like, for example, I was in a classroom once and one of the students made a joke degrading the women. And, you know, no one laughed. He said the joke again. And then one of the leaders on the football team looked to him and said, "That's not funny, and if you were on the football team, you'd know why." Hmm. Or the story of a parent who came up to me and said, "You know, I really appreciate what you're doing. I was at an event with my son. I made a comment about some of the models, a joke. My son looked and said, you know, that's not funny. And I said, it's just a joke. And then he looked and said, you know, that's how it starts." So it's those things like that happen that really remind us, or remind me, you know, of the importance of this, and that this is actually making an impact with our young men here at O'Day.
When you talk about the impact that you're trying to make, is it just teaching a baseline of respect? How would you summarize it? Because we spend a lot of time, especially now in sports, talking about the problem of domestic violence, but usually it's in assessing and trying to figure out the discipline when it occurs, instead of how do we prevent it? Is it teaching that baseline of respect? Is that what you've seen?
Right. I mean, I think part of it is respect, just and generally respect as a rule with treating anyone, right? I think the biggest piece with us in Wad O'Day is that we really want our young men to be leaders in society. So it goes more than just respecting a young woman when you see her. It's more the way that you talk about women with your friends. It's the way that you talk about women with whoever it may be, the way you utilize your social media. One of the biggest things we teach them is that really, it's the second you start viewing or talking or thinking about women as an object, that's the moment that violence against women can occur. And so it's really more than just respecting women. It's the whole, we really want to emphasize our young men. It's about changing the culture within the football team, the school, and then really, I mean, ultimately, you know, the greater society. We really want our young men to be leaders in that.
We're talking to James Beck here, who is on the staff at O'Day, both as a counselor and a member of the coaching staff for the football team. You mentioned kind of the results that you've seen. Have you found the students to be pretty receptive to the message that you guys are putting out there through Coaching Boys Into Men?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I mean, that was one of the biggest surprises to me with the program, being somewhat of a skeptic. Just having, you know, I have a way we sort of structure the program is we'll have four or five guys come up and sort of talk to the team, and I'll ask them some questions and sort of summarize the talk. And, you know, I have guys coming up to me every week. Can I talk? Can I go up there? Which is something, you know, I didn't expect, frankly. And so it's been really, you know, positive to get that feedback from the players, and also some of them that come and said, you know, why don't we do this for the whole school? And so having that feedback definitely shown that our young men are buying into the program and really see the value and the benefit of having it.
James, how do you guys have this program at O'Day? How many high schools are doing this? And for our listeners or anybody that wanted to get involved in that, what would be the best way?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not exactly sure of all the high schools that are doing it in the area. I know Garfield High School is doing it with they were doing it with all of their athletic programs. Biggest thing I would say is, you know, you go to the 710 ESPN website. I know that right now there's a link for you to click, and then you can fill out some information and get yourself involved. You'll be contacted, and then from that point, you know, there's just some trainings around sort of help you get involved in the program.
Yeah, you can also text COACH, COACH, to 710-710. That's our text line, and you'll get more information there. It is 16 high schools that are involved with coaching boys into men. More than 2,000 athletes have participated. Coach Beck, I want to thank you, not just for coming on, but thank you for the work you do with kids in the community. As in my previous life as a newspaper reporter, I covered high school sports in Seattle. I love high school sports. And I think it's an incredibly challenging, it's a really important job that you do. And I'm really grateful to have people with the kind of care and concern that are raising the next generation of young men and the kind of things that you and steps you guys are taking. So it's wonderful to talk with you. And just thank you for all that you do, kind of for the community and for the kids.
Absolutely, absolutely. And thank you for promoting the Coaching Boys and Men program.
It is Coaching Boys Into Men, and it is a partnership we have. We're going to be promoting the work they do. And certainly the issue of domestic violence is something that has been a problem but has gotten increased attention in the sports world over the past few years. And I think the thing I'm most excited about with this program is that this is something that is done to try and prevent what we all see as a huge social problem from occurring in the first place. And we'll keep you updated on things that we are doing in that partnership with Coaching Boys Into Men. The Mariners travel roster is out. It includes a Husky who had not played above double A before this season. Braden Bishop is going to Japan. We'll tell you more and get with the professor next.